Accession number 30134, Reel 12.
Okay, so that's Joe Sedgley, it's Reel 11. You were just painting the general picture, yes. Joe, weren't you, regarding St. Ergenbosch?
Now, here is a diagram which shows just how surrounded with canals and waterworks and so on, and there's the River Dommel, St. Ergenbosch is. That is the centre of the town, was, when I visited it 5 years ago, on the 50th anniversary. It has spread all over the place. But yeah. However, that is the hard core of the town. See how what a strong place it is.
Yes, I mean, this is one of your excellent home-produced maps, Joe, isn't it, you're showing me?
Yeah, well, that brings it out, relief.
But what it shows me is that Ergenbosch is basically surrounded by a moat. So it's a fortified area, so surrounded by
800
water.
Years.
Yes.
And the surrounding countryside, the Germans had cut the dikes full of water.
Waterlogged.
So the only movement is across the roads or across the railway, because they're raised above the water level.
Yes.
Because Holland is a very flat country, and a lot of it has been reclaimed from the sea.
Mm.
And all, of course, apart from these, it's full of dikes and ditches all over the place.
Yep.
And some of them very deep, 4 or 5 feet.
Mm.
And that is the sort of country that you're up against. Now, you know, to clear St. Ergenbosch was a divisional task. And, strange enough, we were paired against a German division, the 712th, who had been fighting very hard in Belgium and South Holland, but they were still in good fettle and gave us a really hard time. But that, you can see, you appreciate how important the place was.
Well, I can certainly see as a layman how difficult it must have been to take this place, or to contemplate taking this place. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm.
Also, the Germans had erected, of course it's not shown here, but real consequence, forward positions in the villages around the place,
mm-hmm.
forward defences, which by reason of the flooded nature of the country, frequent ditches and so on, was quite strong.
Mm.
So, the broad plan for the taking of St. Ergenbosch, divisional plan, for the two brigades, 160 and 71, to clear the German defences in front of St. Ergenbosch. Mm. And one of the strongest was Hintem.
Yes.
There are other little villages, Rosmarlen and all the rest of it.
Mm.
Newland, Kriestraat, and so on. So that was the first task. And then, when they'd been cleared, and for 158 Brigade which we were, with ourselves leading, and with D Company leading the battalion, was to mount into Kangaroos and crash through, bounce the bridges, and establish a foothold in the town. That, supported by a squadron of tanks and also flails. Now,
your line of advance here, Joe, was along the railway line?
No.
Right.
The road is not marked.
Okay.
A secondary road.
Okay.
No, that was our night advance.
Yes.
But I'll show you what a flail tank looks like. This.
Yes, a tank with a roller and chains on the front.
That's
basically.
Right. And that the idea is that they go in front, or at least just obviously not right in the front, because they're vulnerable. Tanks will do that.
Mm.
And beat the ground and set off mines. A flail. And of course, what the Germans quite often, what they used to do was to connect the leading mine to other mines down the road.
So oh, I see.
When the first one went, set off all the others.
Yes.
How it didn't happen in this particular case. But however, that is a flail, and then that's how we were to go in, you know, and bounce those crossings. Now, Kangaroo is a Sherman tank with a turret sawn off, and it could accommodate uncomfortably about 8 men a section. So, three sections in the platoon, 9 in a company, 4 companies, 4, 9, 30, quite a lot of these things.
Yes.
You'd have an enormous sort of tail, not to mention your support weapons, your carriers, your gunner, and so on.
Mm.
In fact, it was calculated that a column with these things and other support weapons would be 111 vehicles.
Really?
And on bad roads, I mean, quite a...
Mm.
Not a very good idea.
Mm. And noisy, Joe, presumably.
Oh, noisy, because this was day. I mean,
yeah.
The idea was to bounce these bridges before night fell and establish us by night.
Right.
You, the bouncing to be in the daylight.
Right.
So that was the idea. Now, in front of, that was October the 22nd. Now, the thing is that the attack by 160 Brigade and 71, two leading brigades, didn't go all that well. They met very determined opposition, a lot of casualties, both sides, and of course the nature of the country.
Mm-hmm.
But however, it was, we were given the go-ahead to go, and in front was the recce regiment, reconnaissance regiment. But they encountered flails, they encountered mines, 88mm, two tanks were knocked out, and the thing dribbled off to, couldn't get it. Well, obviously, everything was confined to a road. You had, dominated by SPs, mines and so on, and the thing didn't take off. Instead, we dismounted and took positions at a place called Bruggen.
Mm-hmm.
Out here. Bruggen.
Okay, Joe, yes, it's on.
Yes. There was not very much fighting for that, and it was dark anyhow.
A couple of miles to the northeast of St. Durgenbosch.
That's right. So that was occupied by a night attack, but it was not on to push on with these kangaroos, clumsy things, and also there's a tremendous tail. I mean, to deploy out of that would have been a nightmare. Onto the boggy ground and everything, and assuming, of course, that the Germans didn't blow up the bridge before we got there.
And presumably, if you were advancing on a single line through a narrow...
You couldn't deploy.
No.
So, anyhow, so that was called off. And Bruggen was occupied as a sort of strong point or start point. And a night attack was decided on. That's where we came in. This was our big moment on 23rd of October at night. It was to take place at 2 o'clock in the morning, the 24th. Incredibly difficult country, in the dark, and it was to be done along the railway line. Oh, sorry, this is the map to follow now, yes. Along the railway line. Along here.
Yes.
There were German positions on there. One or two were located, others weren't. But the idea was that the leading companies would rush these places and overwhelm them. And of course there were other people behind them as well, and those were, after all, small posts. It was incredibly difficult country. Not only was it waterlogged, but there were frequent ditches into which you could sink.
Mm-hmm.
Wire obstacles in some way, not tactical obstacles, but, you know, part of field equipment and so on.
Yeah.
And the idea was to bypass this strong point, which is a very strong point.
Hinton.
Yeah, Hinton. And work our way up to reach this located enemy position by first light. And that was between the railway line and this lake.
Yes.
We were given very generous artillery support to keep everybody's heads down, including this place. And also what they called movement light. No moon, very dark, and rainy, drizzly, very dark. And this movement light is done by searchlights onto cloud, and so as to create shadow.
I know this as, I think, as what you're talking about is Monty's moonlights, Joe?
Yeah, that's right. Well, yes. They have other names.
Yes.
And so we've given that. We've given a lot of artillery support, generous artillery support. And behind the battalion, on the railway line, would come the 1st, 5th Welsh with engineers to clear the mines. And behind them, at first light, tanks, a squadron of tanks who would clatter along the sleepers and join us here. So that was the point, that was the thing. And at first light, when we got here, the 7th Welsh were to attack
Hinton.
That had already been attacked, well, the 1st Welsh sitting outside, and another battalion had worked their way into it, at least got a company in there, the 6th Welsh, usually it's from another brigade. But it was still strongly held by the Germans. And in fact, most of the troops which had been flushed out of the strong points, village and so on, had got into there.
Yes.
So it was quite strong. Anyway, they were to attack simultaneously, as much near as possible, to our reaching this point.
Yes.
Of course, everything that we would need on our objective had to be manhandled. Anything, everything, whatever. Water, rations to keep us going for at least 48 hours, 24 hours, ammunition, reserve ammunition, in fact everything that we might need to survive 48 hours.
And are you trying to, I mean this is obviously a surprise as far as the Germans, you're trying at this stage to surprise the Germans?
Oh, absolutely.
Advanced position.
Well, the thing is that the conclusion the division came to is that it was, let's see, possible, that's too strong a word, but you couldn't at that stage bash your way in frontally. And because the roads, railways and raised places were so dominated by German 88s particularly, and mines, and you couldn't maneuver in the in-between country, because of
waterlogged,
you had to find a way in somehow, and if you could break the deadlock by opening a breach, as it were, that would do the trick.
Yes.
And so that's why that plan was resorted to. Everything had to be manhandled.
Yes, what I was getting at there, Joe, was that because you were trying to do this to advance over difficult country, over railway lines and sleepers with waterlogged land either side, and you're trying to do it quietly?
You couldn't.
No.
You couldn't do that, no. Not quietly. No, and you'd be spotted. I mean, as I say, the Germans did have positions along, they'd soon find out you were doing something. No, no. So this had to be done the way it was. And, as I say, there were two companies leading, one on either side of the railway, very close up. and with a platoon deployed to rush Pillbox or other strong point, followed of course by the rest of the company if necessary. Bazooka their way into it and you know, rush it. In fact, there were, I think, two or three posts along here. And of course, they didn't probably rouse the Germans very, very much because it might be a fighting patrol. Not realizing that behind the whole battalion.
Yes.
The rest of the battalion was, in theory anyhow, to come back, to come along in threes, but that was impractical.
Uh-huh.
What it boiled down to was single file, humping everything, and keeping one's rifles and things dry as well. And sometimes one just sunk into these ditches about 4 feet or something, and everybody got soaked to the skin. But we passed within probably 150 to 200 yards from Hinton. It was on fire, probably as though it was being shelled.
Yes.
And appearing there, I mean, I saw it myself. There were, looked like people dancing about in the flames, like Dante's Inferno.
Yes.
But we slipped by, of course. Moonshine didn't betray us, I mean, and we slipped quietly by this strong point.
Yes.
But we were hard pushed, and everything had to be, yes. Now, I think now the best thing is to. I think we'll get on to our objective.
Fine.
Because then there's a lot more. A bit more
the objective being this strong point by the lake, Joe,
that's
yeah?
That's right, yes.
Okay.
Now, so I have done all this here and underlined the salient points. Mm. Now, this position here is about a couple of miles from our start point, which was way back.
Yes, yes.
So it gives you the idea of the depth of the penetration.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, 0200 hours was our start time from our base. Yes, the night was dark and cloudy, and then we had movement light. Generous artillery support. Yes, everything, this equipment, water, rations, reserve ammunition, other impediment, all had carried over this waterlogged country. Yes, a wider deployment. Apart from being impractical in that waterlogged area, might have easily embroiled us with other enemy posts.
Yes.
And give the game away. So the frontage on both sides was about 60 yards. Yes. Ditches, dikes, 4 feet deep, 4 yards across, filled with water, and some wiring cases. The rate of advance was calculated at about 100 yards in 4 minutes, which is probably a bit optimistic.
Right. This is both sides of the railway line.
That's
you?
Right, yes. Yep. Yes. Now, again, these posts are overwhelmed. There's no particular merit in describing one or the other. They were taken by surprise and probably thought, well, the enemy are far away. Let's have a good night's kip.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, casualties were few. We picked up from these posts quite a few prisoners who were escorted to the rear of the column and accompanied us, unwilling spectators of what was going to happen.
Yes, and they went to the intelligence people, presumably.
Oh no, at that time they were just, I mean, there was no time for that. No, right. They were just kept under close guard and marched along.
Right.
All that was to come later.
Mm.
Yes, unwilling spectators. And of course, bypassing Hinton. Also, another difficulty arose as we went along. Wireless communications broke down because the sets were receiving, in great strength, a comic program coming from Stoverbosch. And so runners had to be resorted to. Not that there was anything of any great need of them, but they had to. And just imagine them swishing their way back, you know, from one company to another. Mm. Now, we got there, and that was a series of trenches, intended, no doubt, by the enemy as a close defence of Stoverbosch. We found them empty, which we promptly made good use of. So there you have the picture of between 400 and 500 men, Italian strength probably at that time, having made their way right behind enemy lines, about a couple of miles, and ensconced themselves just about the sort of the suburbs, in front of the suburbs of Stoverbosch, new suburbs. They are in this rather strong position, flanked by a lake, and by the railway with other people coming up behind.
Yes.
Well, that carried us about 1 o'clock. I think we'll leave it at that and we'll carry on the battle afterwards.
Thank you. I'll pause this now, Joe.
Yeah.
Okay, Joe.
Okay. Thank you. Right, well, we said about 4:30. It was still dark, just before dawn, getting light. And we'd reached our objective. Now, mercifully, the music hall program had ceased. It had all gone to bed now. And went off the air, and normal wireless communication possible. As I said, the battalion promptly occupied the empty trenches and occupied them. Establishing all-round defence. A roadblock was set up in the outer road in the suburbs, and it was not long before several more Germans were put in the bag, including a carload of German officers returning from a jolly, quite oblivious to the fact of what was happening and thinking themselves very, very safe behind these forward lines. Anyway, two of them were shot dead and the others made prisoner. And in the course of the few hours, several Germans just walked into the lines and promptly popped in the bag. We had quite a little collection.
Mm-hmm.
And as dawn broke, one could see parties of German on the outskirts of Stoverbosch. In the suburb area, shaking their blankets and doing early morning chores, and who were promptly engaged. Complete surprise had been achieved. Complete surprise. The force of some 400 to 500 men, that's us, had penetrated some 2 miles behind the enemy lines and were right in their in their guts. And As the first Fifth Welch were now coming up to join us, to be followed shortly afterwards by a squadron of tanks bumping along the railway sleepers, the area had been cleared of mines, and the position was growing stronger every minute. Now, as planned, at first light, the first 7th RWF attacked at Hinton, and now left the battalion. Now the battalion had Hinton on his left rear, and the Germans were driven out. And as they came down the main road into Stoverbosch, they had to cross a gap between the houses, because the houses are ranged alongside that road, except for that gap. And that gap was only about 600 yards from the battalion position. And six Bren guns were trained on that gap. to be added by more until we had 12 Bren guns. And they had a field day shooting up the Germans, pulling back. Infantry at the double, horse-drawn artillery at the gallop, and wagons as well. And as they came to that murderous gap, they slewed over onto the lee side of the road. And that was a real field. And then the artillery joined in as well, and there was a real slaughter in that area.
Yes.
Dead Germans, dead horses, broken up wagons, broken up gun carriages, and there it was. And so the infantry, presumably on the lee side, managed to get their way back into Sertogenbosch, but not a lot of other people. Mm. The attackers, targets were engaged with rapid fire, and there it was. And it was quite a sight. Normally, our attacks and so on have been on rather narrow fronts. And usually, especially in the Bocage country, you couldn't see what units to the right or left were doing. But here you could see pretty well a battlefield laid out, as it were, and taking part. Mm. And the whole thing pretty well before one's eyes.
Those Bren guns, Joe, that were on firing toward this gap, were they your company or were they just battalion?
I don't remember, quite honestly.
Right, okay.
They were battalion, but whether or my company or not, I don't know. But anyhow, we got onto them. I mean, there's no question about that. We'd say, did I specify the order in which? I don't think I did. The order in which companies went.
The advance on the railway.
I think we probably. Yes, I don't think so. But that probably wasn't our company. I don't know, it might have been. Hmm. But it wouldn't be, I mean, any all Bren guns were available.
Yes.
We're trained onto that gap, and there was real slaughter. So, by now, the 1st 5th Welsh had passed through the battalion and had been clearing houses in the suburbs and secured a bridge across the canal. That's this way.
Yes, I see.
Yes. Leading into the town proper. But also, of course, at the same time, the Germans began to recover from their initial shock. And a tank and SP gun appeared in that area and threatened the 1st 5th Welsh, who had, as yet, no anti-tank guns brought up. But ours had come up. Two of ours, anyhow. And we loaned them to the 1st 5th Welsh, and they promptly knocked out the tank. Whereupon the 1st 5th Welsh got on to brigade and announced the glad tidings. Our commanding officer furiously got on to brigade and said, "It's our gun that knocked out the tank, and not the bloody Welsh."
Yes.
Anyhow, they put the record straight. The SP gun withdrew, and that was that. Now, by afternoon, the 7th RWF had completed the clearing of Hintham. There was still a bit of clearing up to be done. And had closed right up to Sertogenbosch, lining up with the 1st 5th Welsh, in attempts to secure a more wider bridge over the canal and establish more bridges over the canal and establish a firmer bridgehead over the main part of the town. And that put us really out of the forefront of the battle by that time. But by now, the Germans had been thoroughly aroused and with their usual resilience began to react vigorously. And then, I'll go off this now, because now it belongs to this. Now comes the clearance of the town.
Okay. Can I just ask you about the bridges, Joe? Were many of those bridges on your map here? You've drawn six. I don't know how many bridges there were, but were many of those bridges intact when you got there?
No, they weren't all. On the other hand, one or two of them, particularly the one that the 1st 5th Welsh got over, had been sprung by surprise. the 7th Welsh Fusiliers weren't so fortunate. And in one case, I got over the bridge, and the thing was blown up behind them. And the Germans closed in on them with tanks, and after a lot of casualties, they had to surrender. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't all that easy. But eventually it was done. And the way they got over, it was over a lock that was still intact.
Right.
Which the engineers then improved on. Now I want to collect the end. That's no, I just want to get some. Yes, well, town clearing, as always, fighting in gardens and houses and so on, is a messy affair. And there's no merit in going through things.